Good evening, Brother Theo, and fellow Dharma brothers and sisters from PGN Subang, Brother Theo's Kalyana Mitra group, and brothers and sisters from NBC Klang. Thank you, Brother Theo, for your kindness to come again to NBC here to share with us the Dharma knowledge. And tonight's topic is understanding the importance of the four means of accomplishment, Iddhipada, or another way of putting it means the four bases of success and the importance of the five faculties, these being integral parts of cultivation for enlightenment. These four means of accomplishment or bases of success, while over here it is part of the 37 factors of enlightenment in the spiritual side, but the same four bases of success are also equally important if we are looking from the worldly point of view for worldly accomplishment, because these are mental states, and when we cultivate it for the spiritual side, it's sort of different from the worldly side, in the sense that one leads you to release from dukkha, the other leads us to the worldly knowledge and acquisitions and worldly successes. Right. So, without taking more time, I'll hand the mic to Brother Theo, and let us, as usual, take our refuge and observe the precept. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Kame sumichachara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjhapamadatana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today, again, we supposed to meet last month, I think, because of Vesak. So Brother Khan text me and say, Bertil, after Vesak, the committee member need a rest, retired. So that's why last month we cancel the talk. But don't worry. Looks like it's meant to be. Then today, despite the holiday, actually I was quite surprised that still quite a number turn up. It's supposed to be a long break for our Hari Raya. So the school, I was told, they have 10 days break, holiday, in a stretch. So normally on long vacation or holiday break, most people, they have their own family trip or they plan their visit back to their hometown and special maybe holiday. Good that you all still like to attend Dhamma sharing, Dhamma class, Dhamma talk. So I will now proceed with our today's topic, which is quite interesting. As you can see on the whiteboard, it's about the importance of these four means of accomplishment. Or they call it in Pali, Ittipada. And the five spiritual faculties as an integral part of cultivation leading to enlightenment. So this is the topic chosen by Brother Gan. At first, it's only the four means of accomplishment, which is part of the 37 factors of enlightenment. And also, as rightly pointed out very briefly in the introduction, even though these four accomplishments, the four means of accomplishment, or some translate as the four bases of success, although they are included in the 37 factors of enlightenment, but you have to understand these are the initial mental states that they use to cultivate. And these are mundane mental states, more towards the mundane side. But it's part of the 37 factors of enlightenment, because if you don't have the Buddha Dhamma with you, if you just like anybody who just start off with the search for truth, then you need these four. These four are very, very important for lay people to accomplish whatever they want in life, and to be successful in whatever they want in life, just like what Brother T shared with you all in the introduction. So now I will go straight into this topic. The four means of accomplishment, or four bases of success. According to the Buddha, he said these four things, as lay people, they are very important mind state for you to accomplish whatever you want in life, and to be successful in whatever you pursue or determine to develop. The first one is called Chanda. Chanda is a Pali word. You all heard of this word before? Good. If you heard of this word before, you will know. What is the meaning of this word? What is Chanda? What is it? Anybody? This word, the closest one which we can use the equivalent English language is what they call passion. Passion. Passion means things that you like to do. Like you have passion for music or passion to be successful in certain aspect in life. Like you want to be very successful in certain sports activity, or very good at chess game, or financial success and all those things. So you must have passion towards developing them. Then if you are seeker of truth, you must develop the passion, the liking, or the liking, the word is the liking, passion or liking. You must have this passion or liking towards this particular field that you want to be successful in, or you want to accomplish, or you want to excel. Yeah? So passion is most fundamental and most important. If you don't have the interest, if you don't have the passion or the love or the liking, you will not go into it in detail, and you will not have that perseverance to continue to do well in it. So this passion or liking or even interest in that field is very important. So this first means of accomplishment or basis of success is fundamental to whatever you want to be successful in, or whatever you want to accomplish or excel in. Then the next one, the Buddha said, after you have developed the passion to do it, the interest to do it, you have to come about to develop the second basis of success, or the second means of accomplishment. This is called virya. Virya is translated as spiritual zeal, but in this case, it's not for spiritual development. Oh, there's a distortion there. Wait, This one recently has been giving us a bit of problem. Yeah. Oh, yeah, better. Testing. Ah, thank you, better. So this virya is called spiritual zeal. But for this particular four bases of success, although it's the same word, virya, we won't use the word spiritual. We just say zeal. So zeal means that tenacity to go this way, to develop this skill or whatever thing that you want to accomplish. So it's just like our spiritual faculties over here. When you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, and you know how wonderful this teaching is, and how important it is to you to develop the faith and the respect for the Buddha, because he's the fully enlightened one. So with this understanding, it will drive you to put in the appropriate spiritual zeal to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma, which is the teaching of the Buddha. But when it comes to the four bases of success, it's not about spiritual teaching yet. Is about the pursuit of a goal. That's why it's still thought-based. Yeah. So there will be this tenacity, or what they call virya in you, that will lead you to pursue whatever that you want to be successful in, or you want to accomplish or excel in. So this virya, keep in mind, it's not for spiritual understanding yet. It's for accomplishment of whatever you want to do. And most of these are worldly success. But if you are in search for truth, it can lead to spiritual understanding. But initially, the search will take you all over where you don't know which is the real truth. So because of that, this virya is just that zeal, the tenacity to go this way, to pursue all this. So this is the driving force. It will drive you to cultivate, because you have the passion, you have the interest. You want to develop this understanding. So this virya is very important. Then after that, we have what they call citta. Citta is mind. This one is mind or thought. So you have to direct your mind, direct your thought process towards it. So this is what we call willpower. Willpower. You must have this willpower to go into it, to become successful in whatever you try to pursue. So this willpower is using thought. And I believe during our school days, we also heard of this statement, right? If there is a will, there is a way. You heard of this? So if you have a will to be successful, it will bring forth the way. So you must have this willpower determined strongly to accomplish whatever you want to accomplish. To excel in whatever you want to excel in. So these three words, they are linked towards the four means of accomplishment. It can be basis of success or whatever that you want to excel in. Double L or single L? Double L. Single L. Never mind. Check the dictionary. So whatever you want to be successful in or excel in or accomplish, you need to use these four bases of success. So the first three is pretty obvious. These are like, I should say, common sense. You heard of this word, right? Common sense. So passion, spiritual, or no, just the tenacity to go this way. Then you apply your thought. You develop very strong intention or mental intention, which is you will it, you want it to happen. It's just like you all heard of the law of attraction. So the secret is the same. So if you want to have certain thing in life, you must arise that appropriate thought to realize it. So these are all the technique that people use. Whatever you will, if there's a will, there's a way it will come because you use your willpower. But that one is dangerous because good or bad, also it will come. If you will it, whether for wholesome or unwholesome, it will come. That's why all those very powerful dictators or leaders, they also will. Their willpower is very strong. And they will accomplish. But the underlying law of karma that decides the fruition of their action, that one is another very important aspect. So if you base on the law of attraction or the secret alone without knowing this law of karma, which is the nature's law that governs all of life and existence, the spiritual law, then you can make mistakes. Because the law of attraction alone is incomplete. Without the understanding of the law of karma, you apply your will, you can still achieve. But at the expense of other things, there will be other repercussions that can hit back. So to have complete understanding, you need the Buddha Dhamma. You need to understand the various law that governs life and existence, especially the law of karma, karma niyama. Then the other two right view is the law of mind, citta niyama, followed by the law of dhamma or truth, dhamma niyama. Then the fourth one is also important, but these are for worldly people who use that mental faculty. They call it vimansa in Pali. So vimansa means analysis. Analysis. Or what they call investigation. Investigation. It's just like whatever you want to accomplish. You develop the passion, then you work towards it tenaciously. Means you determine to do it because you know this is important to you and this is your hobby or your passion that you want to do. Then after that, you direct your thought and your willpower. Then you try. Then maybe sometimes successful, sometimes not successful. Then you listen to what people tell you, the advice and all. Then you try it out again. Then sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. So you have to have this fourth state of mind. Even though they include it as a factor of enlightenment, but these are for mundane purpose when you start the search. When you want to accomplish something in life, excel in something in life, or be successful in something. That's why it is called the four means of accomplishment, to accomplish whatever you want. And they also call it the four bases of success, so that you can be successful in whatever you want to pursue. Then if you can do it, you will excel in it and become very good. So to excel, you need experience. You need investigative understanding. You also need analytical understanding. But this is mainly thought-based. These are knowledge that you apply to achieve, to be successful. Yeah. So these are the four bases of success or four means of accomplishment. And it's part of the 37 factors of enlightenment. But it is mainly applied towards the initial cultivation, means more towards mundane success or mundane accomplishment. You can be skillful in all these mundane things that you want to achieve, like I described just now. It can be any sports, like badminton, football, or even sports, athletic and all those things. Philanthropic, then you can make it and become very successful. You can accomplish what you want. Then you can also excel in whatever you are pursuing. Like you like certain type of passion. You like to grow orchid, for example, or play chess, or read out books so that you are very knowledgeable. Then you can compete in debates and all those things and become very famous. Or you can even become a scientist. You want to accomplish scientific excellence. Then sometimes you are interested in spiritual things. Or you want to search for truth, to understand things more deeply. Yeah. So these are the various things that you can accomplish in life, or develop success in life, or excel in it. As long as you do this for, it will lead you to success, accomplishment. And you may also become very good at it, as I, you excel in that field. But like I said, this is mundane, initial factor of enlightenment for you to start. And this one mainly apply to those who are without the Buddhist background, who don't have the Buddha Dhamma background or understanding of the Buddhist teaching. And this is how you start. Like I said, these are common sense, thought-based. You use your thought. That's why you develop the interest, the passion, or the liking towards that particular thing you want to be successful in. Then you develop the tenacity to do it, to go this way, because this is important to you. Then you apply your thought, willpower. You develop the ability to go deep into it. Then after that, you investigate into it, you analyze. Then you come out with all the good improvement or good successful experiences so that you can become very good in that particular field. Or you can become an authority in that field. So these are the initial four bases of success, which is the first part of today's topic. Then we come to the second one. The second one is, I think I change back, otherwise the battery will drain. Okay. The second part is regarding the five spiritual faculties. These are faculties of mind that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching. That's why it's called spiritual faculties. Some books, they use the word mental faculties. It's not wrong, but it's not such appropriate words. The more appropriate word is spiritual faculty. If it's mental faculty, then it can be anything that has to do with the mind. So mental faculty can be mental hindrance also. Because the mind state, you got kusala, akusala, wholesome and unwholesome. And mental faculty is just whatever that mind develop as a faculty within your mind. So a more appropriate word is spiritual faculty. Yeah, this will allow you to understand spiritual teaching. That's why in Pali it's called pancha indriyas. The mental hindrance is called nivaranas. Pancha nivarana, mental hindrance. Mental hindrance, like the word, express itself. It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness within. That's why it's a mental hindrance. It will hinder you. And those are mental faculties that happen to be negative. That's why it's called a mental hindrance. They are called mental hindrance. And the opposite five, which is the spiritual faculties, are very important. And this is conducive for enlightenment. That's why these five spiritual faculties, they appear twice in the 37 factors of enlightenment. The Buddha said, when you cultivate it, you perfect it and stabilize it until it becomes powers, balas in Pali, or unshakable spiritual faculty. Means that spiritual faculty is so stable in you, it becomes unshakable. Nothing can shaken your spiritual faculty. Your spiritual faculty is so established that nobody can influence it or cause it to even create any doubt or waver. That is what balas is all about. Unshakable spiritual faculty. Not only it become a part of you, it has develop the understanding behind. That's why it is unshakable. No more doubt, no more problem with this spiritual faculty. And when you have this spiritual faculty, technically, I use the word technically, which is the case. You don't need method and technique to meditate. When you have this five spiritual faculty developed, the five mental hindrance, the opposite five, they will cease. Straight away they will cease. Yeah. And because the hindrance are no more there, what happens is your mind straight away enter the meditative state. That's why it don't need method and technique. It don't need to train, because that is the meditative mind. That mind that has the sadha. You understand what is sadha now? Faith, yes. Faith in what? Faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Faith in the Buddha and his teaching. And this faith is very important. This is confident. And his teaching. And this is not blind faith, you have to understand. This one is faith born of understanding. Understanding clearly who the Buddha is. He is not only an enlightened being, he is a fully enlightened one. He has perfected all of understanding or wisdom. That's why you can say at the time when he arrives as a Sammasambuddha, after he got enlightened underneath the Bodhi tree, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born at that time. And that is the extent of uniqueness of the Sammasambuddha. And because of that, we have great respect and gratitude towards him, and our faith in him is really, really strong. Then finally, when you realize his teaching, it becomes unshakable. There is no more doubt. That's how the enlightenment come about. When you realize the first stage of sainthood, sotapannaship, or your form and mind become a sotapan, the first three fetters will be severed. There are 10 fetters that bind the living being in samsara, according to the Buddha. And the first three are very, very powerful. And the first one is sakkayaditti, self-delusion. Once you severe that one, you will become completely different. When you come to understand that this five aggregate of form and mind is not what you think you are, this one is karmically conditioned out, dependent originating, condition arising. It has the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering if you attach, cling, and hold, and grasp. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity where you can cling on to, hold on to, and say, this is me, this is I. That's why it's non-self, empty, not you. Once you break that first fetter, straight away, the second and third fetter will be gone. The second fetter is faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. The faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha is unshakable, different really. Because after you have realized that teaching, you will not have any more doubt in the Buddha and his teaching. And the triple gem is where the teaching is. Without the Buddha, there is no teaching. Without the Dhamma, there is no teaching. Without the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, there is no teaching. That's why the moment you realize this teaching, the first two fetters gone. Then the third fetter also gone. Your belief in rites and ritual ceases to be no more. You understand clearly, deeply, who you are, what you are. And when people come along and tell you, hey, you die already, or your parents die, they will take birth where and where and where, then you have to do prayer, you have to do what, to maybe help them and all those things. You will know, this guy don't understand. This guy is trying to make money from you. Because even as a sotapan, he will know, this five aggregate of form and mind is not real. It will disperse, gone. Of course there is law of karma. There is rebirth and all those things. But there is no reality. We are just a form and mind. And the Buddha said, because of this form and mind, every life it comes, it is born of the karmic nature. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So when you understand that, everything is related to karma, nothing else. So you will not have those delusions anymore and believe them. That's why rite and ritual cannot disturb you anymore. They got no power over you. You will understand what you need to do. When your form and mind got a duty, fellow piety, you can do, no problem. But there is no more delusion. There's no more attachment, no more clinging, no more wanting to do. When there is condition to do, when there is understanding behind it, then this form and mind will manifest and it will do what it has to do, which is through its own understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. And then it will do different things. It will not believe in feng shui and all those things. It will not believe in all those rite and ritual that the medium tell you or the fortune teller tell you or people tell you. No more. Gone. So that is how powerful faith can be, sadhana. When you understand clearly who the Buddha is and his teaching, the realization of his teaching will make this faith unshakable. That's why Sada become very, very stable, unshakable, become balas, power. Then when you understand who the Buddha is, how special a being and how unique a being he is, he is not only enlightened, he's fully enlightened, perfect in wisdom and virtue, and is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. What are you waiting? If you know he is such a great being, what will you do? Huh? You will go all out to learn his teaching, isn't it? Because your faith in him, your great respect and gratitude towards him is unshakable. It's so powerful. That's why this virya will develop, the spiritual zeal to go this way. Spiritual zeal, or tenacity, to go this way, to learn his teaching, to walk the path of Dhamma, to realize his teaching, to understand his teaching, and to follow his footsteps. And this is very powerful. That's why the virya will drive you. And virya, please don't make the mistake. Huh? A lot of people read English book. They say this is effort. This is not effort. Virya is a spiritual zeal or tenacity, a very strong energy within you, born of true understanding, born of very powerful and stable faith in the Buddha and his teaching. And this one drives you to cultivate. It's not an effort. You don't make effort. Effort under Noble Eightfold Path is called Samavayama. It's a different Pali word from virya. And that one is effort. Effort is thought-based. This one is spiritual tenacity. That's why I use this word, spiritual. It drives you to cultivate, to go along this path of Dhamma, to develop the understanding. Then what you will develop is sati, the next spiritual faculty, which we normally call it as mindfulness. But this word, if you don't understand the English word, you will be very confused. Because mind denotes there is a mind inside there. Then mind in fullness, because there is this two word, asana. But they never tell you your mind is full of what? Then it's wrong. Then it's not mindfulness anymore. Yeah. Even when it is full of thought, also it's not sati anymore. But this mindfulness is mind in fullness without thought. Understand? Do you understand? That's why they don't know how to find a word for this. Because they don't know what this is. But later on, the later people who understand, they use the correct word. That's why J. Krishnamurti, Eckhart Tolle, and some of the later teachers, they know this word. They call it awareness. But this awareness is very confusing. Because if you don't know what this is, you will think it's a consciousness. Because they say to be aware is to be conscious. Understand? True or not? This English word, if I say, are you aware? You say, yeah, I'm aware. Your meaning is what? You are conscious. True or not? But this meaning is not conscious. It's awareness before the knowing. That's why you have to add in this word. Awareness before the knowing. And what is knowing? Yeah? Who know? What know? The thought. Understand or not? Through your aggregates of mind. When you perceive something, you come to know what the thing is. Like the Buddha Rupa. How do you know? You perceive it. My voice. How do you know? You perceive it through your hearing consciousness. Then you process it through your memory. That's why that word come out. The perception come out. So external form. Everything that you come to experience through your senses, you need aggregate of mind to perceive it, to know about it. So perception is the one that brings the external form into the mind. And this is very powerful. The moment the knowing arises, means when this aggregate of mind, thinking, mental state, feeling, or perception, when they arise, the thought, which is the pure awareness and its content, arise. But awareness is before the content, before the knowing, before the aggregates of mind arise. That's why it's the direct seeing. Seeing things as they are, without your brain interfering, without your views and opinion interfering. It's just aware, because it's before the knowing. The moment you know, it comes from memory, perception, your conditioning, your views, your opinion, and whatever conditioning that you have, maybe through your tradition, your belief system, your race, your culture, and all those things. That's how thought process arises. And this sati, the Buddha said, is just an awareness before the knowing. That's why it's silent. It's just aware. Standing, aware. Walking, aware. Lying down, aware. Sitting, aware. That all the connecting movement within the four postures, between, in between, you can develop awareness. As long as your mind is silently flowing with it, then it is with it. That's why anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. Your awareness and the in and out breath move as one, in complete synchrony. That is sati. He never asks you to note. Understand? Noting is perception, creating thought. The thought trying to be aware. And that is completely nothing to do with awareness. Awareness is just silently aware. So this sati, you have to develop the training. And the reason why people cannot develop this is because the mental hindrance are there. When the mental hindrance are there, it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of sati and samadhi. These are the meditative state. That's why you look at Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha said you need to have sila. You need to have sila before samadhi kick in. And you need to have samadhi before wisdom or panya kick in. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path is also defined as sila, samadhi, and panya. So sila, if you don't break your precept, if you don't violate your precept, you will have more peacefulness. You will have better, clear, and calm mind. That's why when you chant the precepts, when you renew your precept towards the end, what did the monk chant? Silena sugantin yanti, silena boga sampadan, silena nibuntin yanti. What is the meaning? Yeah? What is the meaning? You heard so many times from the monk there. Precept is the source of what? What is sugantin yanti? Source of happiness, understand? Then the second one, boga sampadan. Precept is the source of spiritual wealth. Understand or not? Then the last one, precept is the source of peacefulness of mind. That's why you keep your precept, you will have joy. Because if you don't violate your precept, you got no coming negativity, you don't have fear, worry, anxiety, the mental hindrance is gone. You don't have to worry about people coming after you when people come to know. And a police case and all things. You don't cheat people, don't deceive people, you don't harm and don't kill. You are very peaceful. Nobody will go after you. So that's why precept is the source of peacefulness of mind. And without peacefulness of mind, you cannot meditate. And it's a source of joy, because when you don't make mistakes, when you don't kill, don't harm, you don't cheat, you don't deceive, and you don't partake in intoxicants, you have good mind state. You don't have karmic negativity. You don't have all the karmic friction. That's why you have a lot of happiness, a lot of joy. Your karma become very good. You don't have to lament, become sad, and all those things. Then, when you keep your precept, means you are with people who are with moral values and qualities. That's why you go to temple and renew your precept. Then you associate with spiritual people, especially the monks, the sangha, the cultivator, the Dhamma friends. They're what you do. You receive spiritual wealth in return for your whatever duty that you do. That's why the order of the monk, the sangha tradition, and the laity is supposed to be a symbiosis. It is a system that the Buddha established so that the lay people can play their role to sustain the sangha, to provide for their needs, the four requisites and all those things. Then in return, the monks has to be worthy of offering respect and all those qualities. And because of that, you will receive merits, blessings, spiritual health. Then they will at the same time chant for your blessings. Then they will also give you Dhamma talk, share the Dhamma with you. That's how it works both ways. You support them, they will benefit you in kind through spiritual teaching, through spiritual understanding. That's why precept is the source of spiritual wealth. Precept is the source of joy and happiness. Precept is also the source of peacefulness of mind, calmness of mind. And this is how the teaching come about. So without these precepts, if you don't live by the moral causation through the understanding of the law of karma, chances are you have mental hindrance. And when you have mental hindrance, you don't have peacefulness of mind. That's why it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why this sati is inner awareness. That's why you find it so difficult to have this. Then what you do? They teach you method and technique to anchor your mind so that it don't think, so that it don't run. You will not become heedless. That's why they use method and technique to dull your mind. And they teach you how to concentrate and focus, which is not sati. Because they got no other way to teach you. Then they teach you thought-based meditation or so-called noting mindfulness. Note this, note that. Thinking that by noting, you keep on repeating the thing, you will not become heedless. You will not be lost in thought. But you will become mechanical. You know what is mechanical? Repetitive. And you verbalize a lot. Because noting is words. You verbalize. Pain, pain, pain. Thinking, thinking, thinking. What are you doing? Intending to walk, intending to walk. You are verbalizing. You are not developing mindfulness. You are not aware. You don't understand the teaching. That's the reason why this spiritual faculty cannot be developed. And the Buddha said to develop this one is very easy. If your spiritual faculty is not stable, if the hindrance is still there, then the Buddha said, choose an object of meditation. He suggested anapanasati because it's very neutral. And anapanasati is always in the moment. Your breath, your breathing is always in the moment. Then after you have some form of stability of mindfulness, that's like the first category of cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness is kaya nubasana. And within kaya nubasana, there are six categories of practice. The first one is anapanasati, or any skillful mean, object of meditation that can develop mindfulness for you. Then after that, he said, you move on to the cultivation of mindfulness of what? After you have trained your mind to be mindful, what must you do? The second category of practice, kaya nubasana, mindfulness of what?
the four. That's why you go back to daily mindfulness, the four postures. Then after that, sati sampajana of all action and all movement in the present moment. And that is daily mindfulness. You're supposed to do all this, then your mind can be in sati. Then it will stabilize and become samadhi, collected, unwavering. That's why at the moment of sense experience, this samadhi is there. You can see things as they are. Not see things according to what your brain tells you, your memory tells you, your views and opinion and conditioning tell you. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. You're supposed to act according to wisdom, understanding, born of the direct seeing. And this is the real understanding of his teaching. And this is real meditation. That's why people don't have the understanding. They teach according to textbook, to what they have been told and taught through commentary, because they didn't investigate, they didn't find out, they didn't go into Dhamma investigation, Dhamma vichaya. The first factor of enlightenment, the real one, the seventh factor of enlightenment that the Buddha talked about, which is the spiritual factors of enlightenment of the Tathagata's teaching, or his Buddha Dhamma teaching, are just the Satta Bhujanga. And that one, the first factor of enlightenment, the Buddha said, is sati. Without sati, you are heedless. You are as if dead. Without sati, you cannot cultivate. Because the whole of the cultivation is mindfulness. Four foundations of mindfulness. He called it the only way. Ekayana bhikkhave bhikkhu. Ekayano, sorry. Bhikkhave bhikkhu. O bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, leading to the right path, the realization of enlightenment in the here and the now, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why all this cultivation is just mindfulness. And without mindfulness, you cannot start. That's why this is the first factor of enlightenment. And you have to develop this. And when this one comes about, the second factor of enlightenment is Dhamma vichaya. Dhamma investigation. Without sati, you cannot be aware of your mental intention. You cannot be aware of many things that is going on within your form and mind. That's why, how can you investigate the Dhamma? The Buddha under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 very clearly state that your mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. Then he said, if you act, speak, and think with a heedless mind or an unwholesome mind, a deluded mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, suffering will follow you like the wheel that follows the hood. So how to investigate this Dhamma? You have to be mindful with that. Of what? Of your mental intention behind all your actions, speech, and thought. And you must understand what constitutes evil. That's why without sati, you cannot investigate. Then when you investigate, you realize those who violate the precept, they have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And when you act, speak, and think with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, your karma will fall. That's why karmic friction will lead to suffering. Then you realize this Dhamma, Dhammapada verse 1, is so true. Then the Buddha said, your life, if you want to be happy, it's very easy. Dhammapada verse 2, the complementary verse. If you know your mind is so important, your mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So what must you do? You must take care of mind. You must maintain heedfulness. So if you were to act, speak, and think with a heedful mind, which is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then what happened to you? The Buddha said, happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. You can investigate into it. When you are heedful, mindful, when you understand that there is no more evil root within your action, speech, and thought process, that is what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. That is what cultivation. Without sati, you cannot cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Without sati, you cannot understand what constitutes right view. then you cannot see the link, the dependent origination, the Four Noble Truths. All this you cannot understand. The essential Dhamma. You cannot investigate into it. When the Buddha said, the First Noble Truth reality, birth, old age, sickness and death, if you don't have the understanding, when you confront them without understanding, suffering will arise. But these are the realities of life and existence. How can you investigate into this truth? You can only investigate if you have sati. Then you check, is birth really suffering? Going to old age, sickness and death, is it really suffering when I don't have the wisdom? When I deludedly attach to this form of mind, thinking that it's me. That's why I worry about it getting sick, getting old and die. Then the process that comes with birth, there is so much suffering within. Then you realize all this stand up to investigation. There's separation from loved one, the fifth reality, or prized possession, also lead to suffering. To be with people whom you don't like, when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, you also suffer. Then you realize all these are so powerful. Then finally, he said in the final summary, it is through your self-delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto this five aggregate of form and mind that I call dukkha or suffering. That's why this upadana khanda, the five aggregate of grasping, is the cause of suffering. And you have to investigate what are these five aggregate, the two aspects. And one by one, put it to test. That's why without sati, you cannot investigate Dhamma. And Vimamsa is nowhere compared to Dhamma Vichaya. But this one is investigate what you want to accomplish. Understand or not? Analyze using thought, using knowledge. But that one, use sati to investigate. That's why Dhamma Vichaya is spiritual investigation. Investigate into the teaching, the Dhamma that the Buddha has preached or proclaimed. And this one is very powerful when you have the sati to do it. Then after you have this mindfulness, and when you investigate the Dhamma and it stand up to investigation, what happened to you? Huh? What happened to you? When you investigate into Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 and all the essential Dhamma, then it stand up to investigation. What will you feel? You feel that the Buddha is such an exceptional being there. Your faith in him becomes unshakable there. Your gratitude towards it. But this teaching, which is the Dhamma, which is the truth, stand up to investigation. And when it stand up to investigation, you have this virya, understand? It will drive you to cultivate. But you realize the Buddha is so wise, so beautiful. That's why the third factor of enlightenment is virya. After sati, you investigate the Dhamma, then it stand up the investigation, this virya arise. Then it spur you to meditate again. Then when you have sati leading to samadhi, what happened to your mind? You will realize piti, which is the fourth enlightenment factor. That spiritual joy, spiritual rupture, spiritual calmness, born of mindfulness, stabilizing. Then when you continue to relax into it and silent, then that piti will transform initially into sukha. But sukha is not an enlightenment factor. You have to continue to relax into it and let it become more and more refined until the mind becomes so quiet and so still. It reaches paucity. Paucity is the fifth enlightenment factor, which is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, the true mind, the meditative mind. You must hit that point, that level. Then your mind is in sati. Very stable. And that is the fifth factor of enlightenment. That's why without that paucity, your real meditation cannot start. You must have that silent mind in the midst of life. And that can only come when your mindfulness is very stable. But this paucity still don't have samadhi. You understand? That's why the sixth factor of enlightenment, after paucity arise, you have to determine to be mindful of the four postures and daily mindfulness, sati, sampajana, clear comprehension, mindfulness and clear comprehension, all action, all movement in the present moment. Not until you hit that stability, you have not started the real meditation. The real meditation only starts when your daily mindfulness is very stable, when you have positive, when your mind enters deep. That is the mind that can understand things. Then when that positive stabilizes, it becomes unwavering and collected. Means at the moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel or think of something, it will not have power over you. Because your mind has entered samadhi. It's unwavering, collected. That's why you can see things as they are. And your memory and your brain will not interfere. Because you are just aware. That's how wisdom come about. The fifth factor of enlightenment. The fifth spiritual faculty. And this is the one that liberates your mind. Then after it has this wisdom, combined with samadhi, it gives rise to equanimity, upeka. That is the last factor of enlightenment. That is the one that can live life. That's why under the Mahayana teaching, Sixth Patriarch Platform Sutta, samadhi and prajna is never separated. They are together. Without samadhi, there is no prajna. Without prajna, there is no equanimity. There is no real equanimity. That's why these two are not separate. One leading to the other. Then after that, the prajna or the wisdom will take care of this samadhi and make it transform into the seventh factor of enlightenment called equanimity. This equanimity is born of wisdom, not born of a conditioned state or energy field. That's why it's so different. Can follow? Yeah. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So this will complete what I need to share with you all today. Yeah? And with this, maybe I will end my sharing. Then you got any question, you can ask. Okay? Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
The five spiritual faculties, I think the number five cannot be practiced, right?
It's definitely cannot be practiced.
So
you're right.
The first four or first three can be practiced. The four or which one can be practiced?
And which one? I will explain to you. The first two, you can develop the cultivation for it. That's why the Buddha said you have to do the contemplation. Contemplation. Or the nusati. Dhamma nusati. Sangha nusati. Buddha nusati. Means you contemplate on the nine great virtues of the Buddha. You contemplate on what constitutes the Dhamma. The characteristics of the Dhamma. Then you contemplate on what are the qualities of the Sangha, the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. When you take refuge in these three, you must understand what they are. Then when you understand what they are, like I explained just now, through your understanding of who the Buddha is, he's not only enlightened, he's fully enlightened. And he has perfected wisdom and virtue over aeons and aeons of cultivation. That's why he's a very unique being. And when you have this understanding, then you know he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. That's why he can teach everybody the nine great virtue, teacher of man and God, perfect in wisdom and virtue. And he is the fully enlightened one. He is a guide without comparison. That's why he can teach any living being. So, such indeed is the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. That's why itipeso bhagava araham sama sambuddho. That's why he is the blessed one, blessed with virtue and wisdom. And he's the worthy one because he's an arahant. And he's the fully enlightened one. So all these are there. Then you will develop very strong faith in him. And this can be cultivated through contemplation on the nine great virtues of the Buddha. Through understanding who he is and how great a being he is. Then when you contemplate on his teaching is so different, so unique. It's not knowledge. It's an understanding. It's an awakening that can liberate your mind, can free your mind from all suffering. That's why the Dhamma is very powerful. And when you know that he is so unique, so beautiful, and his teaching is so wonderful, can transform you completely and make you enlightened, then what are you waiting? You must have faith in him, isn't it? And the gratitude and the respect towards him become very different. That's why you were determined to go this way. That's why you will cultivate. This is what virya, it will drive you. When you understand who he is through your faith and confidence in him and his teaching, it will drive you. That's why sadha and virya you can cultivate through this understanding. And it's different from the four bases of success. And this is our worldly thing. You don't develop the passion to understand the Buddha and his teaching. You go and study his teaching because you know who he is. That's all. There is no more passion about him anymore. Because you see the importance of this teaching. You see the uniqueness and the greatness of such a being. To have such a being to be your teacher and your guide, you must count your blessing. That's why your respect, your gratitude towards him is very different, very strong. That's why it drives you. Then sati, technically, sati you cannot cultivate. You understand? Just like wisdom, you cannot cultivate. You know why you cannot cultivate? Because it cannot be learned. Wisdom has to be awakened to. You understand? Awakened to means you must silence the mind without thought. Through the direct seeing, it just understand. When the condition is there, when you have enough of the Dhamma understanding, the essential Dhamma of the Buddha, then your understanding will reach a certain point of stability. Then when this condition is ready, through any of the first, second, or third turning of the Four Noble Truths, it can be anything that can trigger off enlightenment. And it just comes without the thought process. But you have to be ever mindful in the midst of life. Only the silent mind, the meditative mind can awaken. The one that is busy thinking with a lot of energy and thought process can never awaken. That one can have a lot of fantastic meditation experiences. So sati is the same. You have to understand what is sati. Because when you understand what is sati, you no need to train. All those people who actually train, they are training the mundane mind. Understand? You know what is the mundane mind? The heedless thinking mind. But that one need to be trained. Because that one think a lot. Lost in thought. And when you train that one, what are you trying to do? You are trying to suppress and control it so that it don't think. But the understanding of it is very important. The moment you are without thought, you are already aware. You understand that statement? The moment you are without thought, you are already aware. So why must you learn to be aware? The learning is by the thought. The thought tries to be aware. How can the thought be aware when thought is active? You cannot be silent. When the mental hindrance is there, you cannot be silent. Because the mental hindrance is duality, like and dislike. Sleepiness of mind. Then the mind that is not peaceful is restless. Think a lot. Have fear, worry, anxiety. Sorrow and lamentation. Then there is doubt. The spiritual faculty are not there. That's why they are very powerful. And with that mind, you cannot meditate. That's why you cannot enter the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why sati cannot be there. So to develop sati is to understand that the moment you are without thought, you are already aware. So how to make yourself without thought? That's why they go and do concentration. They go and focus. They go and develop jhana, energy field, and thinking that when you hit the ekagata or one pointedness of mind with a strong energy, it cannot think, that is no thought. And of course, when there is no thought, there is energy. And there is clarity, like nothing obscuring you. But there is a conditioned state. It's not a free mind. And that one cannot develop wisdom. That one can develop a lot of psychic. Can read past life. Can read people's thought. Can go into casino and all those things. See light, see vision. A lot of things. And they can conjure many, many things. Can perform a lot of psychic phenomena. But that is not what the Buddha teach. Because the Buddha even told the monk, if you do this, you can be dismissed from the order. You're not supposed to display and show all this unless there is special condition. So all this is in the teaching. So how are we going to develop sati if we have mental hindrance? That's why the Buddha still teach. He gives you an object of meditation. Understand? And what are you supposed to do with the object of meditation? You are not supposed to focus and concentrate and develop all the control and suppression. You're supposed to develop mindfulness. That's why he teaches anapanasati. Mindfulness of in and out breath. Mindfulness of the four posture. Where in the four foundation of mindfulness you ever see the 40 meditation object that use kasina and others to focus and concentrate on? He never teach that. He just explain what sati is and what are the cultivation you need to do with the mindfulness that you have developed. So the moment you are aware, without thought, before the knowing, you are already in sati. So you don't try to learn to be mindful. You don't try to practice mindfulness. I give you this example, you understand. You listen, eh? Swimming. You know how to swim? Oh, very good. You don't know how to swim? Oh, you know how to float? Huh? You don't know how to float? Okay. This is the best. You don't know how to float, eh? I teach you one secret. It's like the mind. Your body is lighter than water. You agree or not? Here you see people float in there. Buoyancy. So next time you go into the swimming pool, you don't panic, you know. You let your body sink down. Completely don't resist. Don't do anything. Completely relax. Let the body go down. When it reaches certain depth, when the buoyancy falls, are you a science student? Archimedes principle. Yeah? The apparent weight, what is the apparent weight? The amount of water you display from your body, yeah, minus your weight minus that one is your apparent weight. Understand now? So you will be lighter by the amount of water you displace. And that one will make you float. Then you realize that after a certain point, yeah, it doesn't go down already. Then that physical body, yeah, starts to float. Then you realize it's so interesting. Because my body is lighter than water. That is the truth, understand not? That is the natural tendency of my body. My body is lighter than water, that's why it can float, buoyancy. So you don't do anything, you will float. Then when your body floats and surface, to swim is very easy there. You just have to move your hand and your leg in there, and then you swim. But when you have fear, what do you do? Because as you step into the pool, you keep on going down. As you, they say, let go, you will float. You let go, you go down some more. That's how you panic. So out of fear, you struggle. Then how most people learn to swim? They force themselves to be afloat. Understand now? They want to maintain the flotation, the buoyancy. That's why they keep on struggling in the pool. And every time drink water. When you understand that your mind is the same. Your true mind is already in sati. Your true mind don't have to learn to be mindful oneself. But it was never with thought. You understand? It was already aware. Why are you not aware? Because you think a lot. You create sankhara. And this sankhara cloud your mind, your true mind. That's why you cannot be aware. So just like the body, the natural state of mind is already aware. So don't try to do anything. When you go for meditation, don't do anything. Just relax, silent, and the thought will come. Because this is through your heedless thinking, your mental hindrance. You let it arise. Don't suppress, don't fight. Don't even try to control or do anything. Don't develop aversion. Aversion means what? I come here to meditate. How come so much thought? Means you don't like the thought. Don't like the thought means what? Dislike. And what is that? Mental hindrance. That's why your like and dislike, your pleasant and unpleasant feeling, they ask you to go and note pain, 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 no? And you keep on doing it without understanding. No? What happens when there is sensation? And why do you label it pain? Because it's uncomfortable. You don't like. True or not? And when you label pain, what happens? It's a mental hindrance. It will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why you cannot be peaceful. You cannot be mindful anymore. And you cannot relax and meditate anymore. You are creating mental hindrance. The aversion, the dislike for the heedless thinking mind. You say, I come here to practice, to meditate, to become peaceful, calm. But how come so much thought? Because your thought is created through your ignorance, through your delusion, through your mental hindrance. When you understand, you just let it arise. Because the untrained mind thinks a lot. It's heedless. If I let it arise, I don't suppress, I don't control, I don't labor, what happened? There is no mental hindrance there. Then the thought will slow down. You try it for you to understand. Then when it slows down, all of a sudden, if you're patient enough, not long, suddenly it becomes completely still, without any concentration, without any doing. Where the doing is by the thought. The thought is trying to meditate, actively meditate. The thought is trying to note this, note that, following the instruction. Breathing in, aware. Breathing out, aware. Verbalizing. Trying to know. Then focusing, concentrating. Look for nimitta. Look for what jhana, what jhana. Who is doing all this? The thought is actively doing all this. And the thought is the meditator. And Krishnamurti already told you, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. Well, when thought is active, you cannot be aware. You cannot be silent. You cannot understand what is going on. It's only awareness that can bring forth the understanding. So your question is very good. Yeah? Wisdom cannot be learned. You need to awaken too. Sati also cannot be learned. You need to have the understanding to let it come about. When hindrance is no more there, the spiritual faculty take over, you are naturally sati. That's why in the beginning I said, technically, when you have the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance is. Then nothing to hinder your mind. Technically, you don't need object of meditation to learn how to meditate, to anchor your mind. Because the moment you see it, what happened to you? The five spiritual faculty are there. When you have saddha, confident in the Buddha and his teaching, means what? Your faith is very strong, you're confident. Means you are very calm, very composed. True or not? No more doubt. Because of this faith. That this virya is a tenacity to keep you awake. No more sleepiness. Sloth and torpor. The mental hindrance. No more. Then when you have sati, you are just silent and aware. Because this is a spiritual faculty that you have developed. That's why you will be in a meditative state or inner peace, inner awareness. Silent. Then when this stabilizes, there is no movement, no thought. That's why this one can see things as they are, can awaken, can understand. When any of the six sender upon contact, what happened? The dependent origination, the essential Dhamma, everything, your form and mind, that deliver through the dependent origination. Your awareness will be aware of it. That's how you learn. That's how you put the teaching to test. Dhamma vichaya, Dhamma investigation. Then when you can silence your mind through sati and a stable samadhi in the midst of life, you keep on seeing things as they are. Not according to what your brain tells you. your memory tell you, your conditioning and your belief system tell you. You see things as they are means no word before the knowing. No labeling, nothing. Like the baby see, understand? The pure see, the direct see. Then you see things as they are. Then from that movement, you come to understand through direct knowledge and vision of the reality. Your mind just awakened. But it saw the movement. Then you straight away understand. This is what the Buddha meant by sabbe sankhara, anicchang. All of sankhara, that movement, the activity, come from your aggregate of mind. Your perception, your reaction of mind, your stirring of mind. These are all sankhara, and they come and they go. Feeling, come and go. Perception, come and go. Mental state, come and go. Feeling, come and go. Anger, come and go. Fear, come and go. Sloth and torpor, the mental state, also come and go. But these are not intrinsic within your true mind. Your true mind got none of all these things. No word, no thought, no concept, nothing. Just Tuwe, the nature itself. Why can't you realize that? Because your mundane mind is too powerful, too active, too heedlessly creating thought, creating mental hindrance. And born of self-delusion, ignorance. And this is the reason why living being becomes heedless. That's how you create karma. That's why this teaching is so beautiful. It explains things so clearly. Can I understand? Sadhu to you, you can understand. Very good. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Richard.
Okay, in that case, I think we'll call it a night. Sadhu, Brother Teo.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Brother Gan, could you please a token of appreciation to Brother Teo for his kindness to come over here and share with us the Dharma.
Oh, finally, this one don't make noise anymore. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, Brother Chua, where are you? Oh, come. He was the kind Kayanamita that provide transport for me and my wife. Sadhu, sadhu. So I offer back to Brother Chua, and he offer back to your temple. So, no work done, but a lot of wholesomeness got done. Sadhu, sadhu. You all get to rejoice. And your Tiratana get to perform such wholesome thing. And you all should thank Brother Khan, Brother Tay, and the committee member for organizing all this. It's very wholesome. Then I also like to thank you all for inviting us over here for the Friday talk. It has been on for the past how many years? Got 3 years or not? 3 years plus. So it has been a very, very good encounter because the condition is somehow very conducive. Every time I come here, I like your Kuan Yin. Your Kuan Yin, they're very, very cute, very different. Then the first day I came, I remember that nature was very strong, Kuan Yin's nature. That's why those who are observant, they know I always go and pay respect to your Kuan Yin. Yeah, because this nature has a lot of affinity with Kuan Yin. And looks like it's meant to be, because every time I come here and do a Dhamma sharing, a lot of things happen. That the Dhamma come out also different. Different. Because it's meant for certain different purpose and audience.
So I really rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then my Kalyanamitra also got a chance to attend. Then because it's recorded, it can also go into our website. Then this will help a lot of people. You go back and listen to this again because it's recorded. And the recording is very clear. So you don't have to try to remember anything. Just listen attentively and absorb whatever you can understand. Then the more you listen, then as you listen, you put it into cultivation and develop the practice, the cultivation, the understanding. Then you will understand differently. Every time you listen after a period of cultivation, you receive different understanding again. Last time you cannot understand the full scope because you are not ready, because you have not developed the cultivation and certain terms are so new to you because you are so used to the traditional teaching, the thought-based teaching. This type of sharing point direct to the true mind, which is Hui Ning's teaching. This side is different. Actually, it's also the Buddha's teaching because it's about sati, no thought. And no thought is the true mind, the silent mind, without thought. Not using the mundane mind, which is thought-based. That's why the Dhamma, the Buddha say, is akaliko. What is akaliko? Timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. And if your instrument is thought, how can you realize a Dhamma that is beyond thought, beyond time. You understand? So, no amount of thought-based meditation can bring you to the point of awakening, to realize this Dhamma that is beyond thought, beyond time. That's why the Buddha says, Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo. Well expounded is the Dhamma by the Buddha. And what is this Dhamma? Svakato Bhagavato Dhammo. Then this Dhamma is sanditiko, can be realized in the here and the now, no need to wait to death, because it's a living Dhamma. Then this Dhamma is akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. Then this Dhamma can be investigated on. That's why ehipasiko. You can investigate into it, because it is the truth. It will stand up to investigation. But you need sati to investigate, not using your thought to think and to rationalize and to analyze. Cannot. Then this Dhamma is opanayiko, leading inward into your nature. And finally, this Dhamma is pacetang, can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves, nobody else. That's why when you understand this Dhamma, you will never go wrong, because the Buddha defined so clearly the salutation to the Dhamma. You salute the Dhamma. You take refuge. That's why you chant all this, and you chant with understanding. And when you have the understanding, you will never go wrong. Well, you will never be so gullible anymore to do those type of meditation that can never lead to this type of Dhamma. Maybe it gives you more knowledge, more energy field, more powerful mind. But it's not all this Dhamma. It's not sanditiko, akaliko, ehipasiko. So these are the characteristics of the true Dhamma that the Buddha teach. So you have to investigate and find out whether what you have realized is really this type of Dhamma, or is it some other type of Dhamma. Then whatever meditation you do, if it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path, it's not the teaching that is taught by the Buddha. It's not the meditation that is taught by the Buddha. But the Buddha makes it very clearly under the Fourth Noble Truth. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. If you say you are enlightened, you don't have right view with regards to the law that governs life and existence, then no meaning. You still don't have the embodiment of the Noble Path Factor of right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then it's not the teaching that the Buddha teach. you still don't have the four right effort to constantly purify your thought process, your mental intention, then you don't hold the noble value of an enlightened one, which has the noble eightfold path factor. You cannot be mindful in the midst of life, ever mindful, to develop the stability of mindfulness, to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness, then that is not the noble eightfold path that the Buddha teach. That you cannot develop the samadhi until it's so stable, unwavering, collected, that can allow you to insight into phenomena, to see things as they are, to awaken to the truth, to the universal characteristics of impermanent suffering state, non-self and empty nature, then it's not the noble eightfold path, then it's something else. So it's very clear, the teaching of the Buddha is very clear, and you can check. That's why its pachetang can be realized by the wise, each for themselves, nobody else. Okay? Yeah. So with this, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. So recall to mind all of your wholesomeness over the past 2 hours or so. Maybe now share all these merits and wholesomeness with all beings, starting with the devas. Akka satta ca bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakan tu loka sasana hita wata camehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Yeah.
Brothers and sisters, please have yourself to some refreshment outside before you go back.